I would rather have a day job than be a Pokemon master.
Han Solo is clearly more attractive than Indiana Jones.
I would take the Star Wars trilogy over the Matrix trilogy any time.
The Legend of Zelda versus Super Mario. Who's better in bed, Jafar or Gaston? And would Thanos masturbate with the Infinity Gauntlet or not? Every week, Nerd Rage the Great Debates brings you the funniest comics, writers, and podcasters to settle some of geekdom's most divisive topics. Find us on Spotify or wherever you find podcasts.
Welcome to the Escapist Comics Podcast. I'm Jessica Baldoni.
And I'm Jesse Hitt.
And today we have a very special guest, two very special guests, actually.
Oh, we should say the date first, though, right?
No.
Okay.
We shouldn't.
Oh, that's tricky. We could bank this one.
Are we talking about banking it right now?
I don't know. I don't actually even know what that term means, really. I think it just means save it for later.
I think it does. Piggy banking. Saving up. Anyways, it's April 27th, 2019. Mm-hmm. Yes. Spoiler alert. Jessica has not seen Avengers Endgame. Please stop tweeting to me and showing me pictures and going to my Facebook and putting up articles. I hate all of you. Okay. Anyways, we have two very special guests today.
Yeah.
From Fair Lady, number one from Image Comics. Mm-hmm. Brian Shermer and Danny Coleman, thank you for being here today, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yes.
You're doing a signing today at Escapist Comics. It's been so busy, I can't even tell you. People are banging down our doors. It's been awesome.
Happy to be a part.
Yay! So come get your Fair Lady number one. We've actually sold a ton of these. We actually tried to order more for the signing. And then Damien didn't send them to us, so
because we sold out.
We did sell out
at the distributor level. Yay!
Yay! Nice. It's going to a second printing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. With a new cover.
Yep.
Yay!
Yep.
That's great. So tell us a little bit about the comic first.
So we originally pitched it to Image as a gender swapped Magnum PI in a post Lord of the Rings world. That's apt enough as a sell point, because I've managed to actually say that to a handful of people at signings and say, yeah, this is what it's about. And they go, you had me at Magnum PI. Give me. But it's not, we pitched it as kind of in a Lord of the Rings type world. It's not really that at all. We wound up, I think, between myself and Claudia Balboni, the artist, and Marissa Louise, colorist, managed to create our own, hopefully reasonably unique fantasy world. So far, no elves or orcs or dwarves, but...
Not yet.
You don't know. It's kind of shop.
Well, that's kind of cool, too. I like elements of, like, medieval fantasy, but then also, like, some futuristic sci-fi. Like, the city that they're in is sort of, like, the husk of, like, a big robot thing, possibly, we don't really know yet.
I honestly don't even remember where that idea came from. it's been, you know, this thing has been in gestation for, like, 7 or 8 years now. And if at some point came up with the idea, I was like, well, what if they all live in this, they're living in a big fallen robot. Yeah. And, it was part of a war that was like 1,000 years ago. So no one really even knows what was going on back then. And there, thus far in the series, we haven't seen any other remnants from that conflict. But I liked the idea of this big hollowed out kind of like mile high, robot that's since fallen down and become the Feld, as I do air quotes on a podcast, because I'm an idiot. It becomes the home for about 10,000 people, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Are there like different? I won't say other robots, but are there like other sections of this world, or is that just like the main city?
That is our primary setting, but the characters definitely go places beyond that. Pretty much every issue. There are a couple of issues that are exclusively in the Feld, but more often than not, they're traveling outside. Probably our other most regular setting that we visit is a wizard's tower, which is where our protagonist, Jenner Fald, who is the titular Fair Lady, she lives there as the primary security force for this tower that she shares with a priestess named Nejla, who is basically the majordomo who's been left in charge. And they butt heads on a regular basis, but at the same time, there is a certain level of mutual respect and admiration is probably a bit strong, but they get on well enough.
How much world building went into it? I think, like, one of the best things about every fantasy comic or book is a map, a mm-hmm. great map. And, like, so how much fun did you guys have doing that?
Doing the map or doing
the map and the world? Both.
So the world building is kind of ongoing. I am very much of the mind that I like to create worlds that I like to create stories where I have a good idea where we're ultimately going to end up. So it's like a finite tale. But I also like giving myself parameters for the world building, but not the whole thing. It's like I didn't pull a Tolkien and sit down and spend years developing languages and maps and histories for all of this territory. I wanted to give myself just enough so that I had places that we could go and play and experiment in on
right.
the fly.
Right.
So that there is still some spontaneity throughout. So it's been a good deal of time obviously focusing on the Feld and a little bit more on some of the other territories that we visit. But in almost every issue, there will at least be a panel or two where mm-hmm. they are somewhere that, you know, came to mind in the writing of the script. And mm-hmm. so there is... So it's a bit more organic in the creation, but also hopefully in the feeling of reading it.
Yeah.
And the map was something that I always wanted, but I wasn't really sure what it was going to be. I think early on I envisioned the classic, we're going to have a map of the entire world and all this, that, and the other. And then I thought, well, that's really too big because it's not Earth, but even if you extrapolate it and say it's, you know, it's the size of Earth. Well, our characters aren't traveling from one end of a continent to another. They're
right.
sticking in kind of a general area. And so then when it came time to do the map, I figured, okay, we do spend a lot of time in and around the Feld. What if we just have that as the basis of the map every time, but then every issue we will just point you to the various places that we go in that particular story? And I thought that makes a world of sense, because then it's... Anybody that actually gets each of the issues, that map will be familiar, but then they will have context for what they just read, as opposed to me pointing out all these other places where maybe things have happened in other stories, but might not resonate with somebody who's only read that one issue.
Mm. Right. That's a good point, too. You said to only read that one issue. I really love, that's one of the things I love the most, is how each one is its own mystery.
Yeah, but there's, looks like there's going to be also like a narrative through line through, kind of like how, yeah, like Sherlock Holmes, where like each book is its own little mystery, but there's also a main nemesis and
right.
things all fit together in kind of a certain way. It seems
yeah.
like that's where it's going, at least.
That's good.
Yeah, that's like, well, we really like Stumptown is kind of like that, too. Each one was kind of its own mystery, and then like you were saying, Jesse, it kind of like threads together like in the end, but you can just hand them like one single story, right, for each one. And there's not a lot of books out there right now that are like that.
The done-in-one idea... came around the time that we actually pitched the book, to Eric Stevenson at Image. And his question after he sent in the pitch was that, okay, I like this, but you reference, you know, Magnum P.I., does that mean that, like, every issue is going to be a standalone story? Mm-hmm. And then he went on, I am the owner of possibly the longest email that Eric Stevenson has ever written. And if any chance in hell he's listening to this, it's like, I appreciate that, dude. This is not a dig. But no, he sent me an email that's about 3 or 4 paragraphs long. Talking about how he really liked the idea of done-in-one stories, how not enough people do that anymore, and that it feels kind of it's unfortunate because he says comics lend themselves to that, obviously, because you can, in a monthly, you can have a literally one physical thing. Why not have it be an entire story? And then he went on to explain how episodic television works by talking about Frasier,
Oh, sure.
Which it was just completely out of the blue, but also it's like, it made his point. It's like, sure, yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's when I said, yeah, okay, yes, we'll absolutely do that.
What's hilarious is I think that was actually very shortly before you ended up getting into Frasier.
Yeah, when he wrote that email, I don't think I'd ever seen an episode of Frasier.
Ever.
And in retrospect, I don't know why we have since watched it. I mean, Danny's seen it a myriad times.
When John Mahoney, so Frasier is one of my favorite shows, and I've loved it since I was 13. And my mother who was a giant sci-fi nerd, thought it would be hilarious to show me the episode where Frasier gives his son's bar mitzvah speech in Klingon. And she showed me that like 2 months before my bat mitzvah, and I spent 2 months convinced my mother was going to do the same thing. terrifying. But I came to love the show and had kind of accepted that it was just something we wouldn't have in common. And, okay. And then when John Mahoney passed away about a year ago, I said, no, let's sit down and just, you know, for my own sense of closure and respect, let's watch a couple of the key John Mahoney episodes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And it clicked and it stuck.
Yeah, and we've watched it all the way through twice now, I think.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Twice.
Yeah.
That's a lot of Frasier. How many seasons of Frasier were there?
11.
Yeah. Whoa, I was gonna say 6.
No, there were
went for more than a decade.
Wow. 11 seasons. It went on for a long time, and it has some of the best sitcom writing ever. The setups and punchlines are beautiful.
Were you Seinfeld over Frasier?
Oh, I couldn't. This could become a whole separate podcast. No, I never got Seinfeld. I still don't get Seinfeld. Yeah. I've seen a couple episodes, and I'm like, sure, it's not for me.
Wow,
that's my patented response. Yeah. It's not for me.
Simpsons over Seinfeld and Frasier, then.
Simpsons.
You gotta pick one.
Simpsons over Seinfeld, to be sure. To be honest, I don't think I've seen a episode of The Simpsons in 10 years.
Well, you don't have to.
But I've got 30 other years to do.
Yeah, exactly. we're not talking about New Simpsons.
Sure.
Yeah, it's fine.
We'll watch that.
No. I just watched the 30th anniversary episode of The Simpsons. Mm. Not good.
Yeah. Special guest stars, Anthony Kiedis.
Yeah.
The guy from Creed.
Yeah.
Somebody from a movie. Yeah. It's all guest stars.
And Flea.
Yeah.
I like Flea.
He's cool. Another thing that really I enjoyed very much about Fairly Odd Number One, I'm kind of a sucker for like an anthropomorphic sidekick.
Sure.
And you for sure, I don't know if we learned the character's name in the first issue, but we know that he's a Jesu. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, and don't ask me where that name came from. I have no bloody clue. Again, there are a handful of notions and names that are in this story that date back 5, 6, 7 years, and their origins, even to me, are lost in the ether. But his name is Owanu, and he is about a 7-foot-tall anthropomorphic mm-hmm. cat person
mm-hmm.
with a 6-foot sword.
Right.
who is basically Jenner's closest friend and mm-hmm. ally, and as occasionally needed muscle. Mm-hmm. And he will basically. He is not, there's a misconception out there that he is a fair man, and he is not. He is just basically her friend, and he likes to hang out.
Yeah.
What might not be entirely evident in the comic, I guess if one reads it all the way through, he's not the most popular person in the mm-hmm. Feld. He doesn't have a lot of friends, but Jenner and he are very close, and their history goes back to the war that's mm-hmm. recently ended, and so he just likes to hang out and help out wherever possible, and occasionally will feel left out when on the times that she doesn't think he should go with.
Yeah,
we haven't got that hasn't shown up in the series yet, but it will.
Is he based on a real cat? On an actual
short answer, no.
Okay.
Longer answer, we're both cat people to be mm-hmm. sure. Danny and I, as to whether or not his face or design mm-hmm. is modeled after anyone, that would actually be a question for Claudia.
Oh, right.
I ceded a great deal of the design work to her and to Marissa because I just wanted to get the hell out of their way.
Yeah.
I mean, there were a few things where I would say, oh, I've got some ideas for how this thing could look, but, you know, do this or do whatever you want. I trust their choices. And tangentially off of that, Marissa's choice to make Jenner a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
That was not in the script.
Ah.
And I was not going into it with the mindset of, oh, she's white. It's like, no, I'm writing the character. You guys kind of sort that out. But I had given both of them kind of the guidelines that I would like there to be diversity in this world. Mm-hmm. I don't want it to be like another, you know, kind of Tolkien world where everybody is white except the orcs. Wink, right. Wink.
Yeah.
And so when the first pages for this came back after Marissa had colored it, it's like, she's a person of color. That's fantastic. Of course she is. That's perfect. So yes, we were very pleased.
What about Octopus Head Man? Like, where does he?
Yeah,
I love Octopus Head Man. Yeah.
I love the fact that a few people have like latched onto that. I've seen a few people like take pictures of that panel and post it on, like, not scans or anything. They're clearly taking a photo with their phone.
We've had fan art of that guy.
Yes, there's been fan art of the guy wearing the octopus on his head.
Well, I am a fan of octopus. Yes. I do have a tattoo on my arm.
Yeah.
So
smart.
I'm very, yes. I can't even, like,
I think
sit with people
case,
who are eating octopuses.
I think in this case, the octopus is smarter than the guy he's attached to.
Yes. And I was like, is he alive? I have to know more about him.
The octopus is definitely the brains of the operation.
And that 100% Claudia.
Really?
That was not...
You didn't have it in the script?
Nope. I think all I had in the script was that he was just a guy that was in this kind of like pseudo-apothecary with a bunch of potions and stuff laying around and trinkets and things hanging.
And she just put an octopus on his head?
She put an octopus on his head.
That's
which,
great.
Yes. And so I guess that's like, okay, that's brilliant. That's winning.
That's awesome.
And the octopus moves from panel to panel. So you can tell that it's not just like a taxidermied hat.
Right.
It's not like a Daniel Boone, like, situation. It's a real living animal.
No, I didn't notice that.
Right. His little arms move. Tentacles, I guess
tentacles.
They are.
Yeah. They are tentacles. I'm glad you know his octopus anatomy.
Eight of them. And they call them tentacles. Oversight, I think, on the part of the person who named them that. Should have been called Aedicles.
What, Aedicles?
Because there's eight of them.
That's not a word.
Well, it would be if someone tentacles
well,
wasn't
I
a word.
I think you need to contact the Oxford Dictionary, sir.
Nothing's a word.
Wait, didn't you study language?
Well, I was going to say, can we not start an etymology today? We'll be here until next Tuesday.
We do this every week, so we have lots of...
No, invite me back when you really do want to get into
it. We would both lose this battle. So you have 5 issues planned out.
So yeah,
right?
five issues planned out for the first arc. It is planned to be ongoing, at least for twice that. So again, as I say, I know where it's going. And as you said, Jesse, there is kind of a big bad that
Sweet.
Is hinted at in the background. But again, you know, did our level best to have those hints be there in each issue, but not, again, compel any reader to pick up all of the issues or read them in any particular order or anything. It all should still work if we did our jobs properly.
Mm-hmm.
So there's five in the can. And then we plan to continue probably with the 6th one coming out in January.
Sweet.
Cool. Awesome. You know, no starting back at number 1 again then. So
that's not the short answer, that is not the plan. Longer answer, I will definitely consult with Eric at Image and see what he thinks on whether or not we should, because I know retailers tend to not be a huge fan of that. I understand that, but I also understand the psychological rationale of, oh, it's a new number one, blah blah blah. It's like, well, not really. And I don't really want to play the Marvel and DC game of reboot.
Reboot number 1.
Fairly Volume 2.0.
Whose idea was it to put the the description on the back cover?
That would be Danny's, and her, and flat out her, I think she had pointed me to like the back of one of the books from the vault.
I'm working with the vault at the moment, and one of the things that I thought they were doing that was really, really lovely is including that little blurb on the back of each issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're if you're picking up a comic to try and figure out what the hell is going on, a solid 80% of the time, you have to read the entire comic to figure out what the hell is going on. And so even kind of from the perspective of, is this book for me? Is this a plot that I'm interested in? Is this a complete story or something where I'm going to have to buy 3 or 5 or 10 of them to understand what's going on? And I thought that was particularly fitting for this book because they are self-contained stories. So you can pick it up, look at the back, here are the basics of what you need to know to understand this comic. Cool, let's read it.
Yeah, it's a great idea, and I can't believe that nobody has done this until the last year.
I would love to see more publishers do it kind of across the board, because even if it's sort of the middle issue of a 6-issue arc.
Yeah.
Again, picking it up and from that blurb you can get a sense of how much catching up you have to do.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's crazy that we've just thought of this now. Yeah. Like, after all these years.
Well, I mean, Prose has been doing it for decades. Yeah. Grades do it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Definitely. Well, thank you for including that. It really helps the retailers too.
That was, again, a big part of the, you know, I can describe the process of creating this in such a way that is either all about the story and the characters and the cool world and the stuff that we're doing with it, but I can also describe it in a way of like, okay, how are we making a product that is going to not only appeal to readers by its content, but also by its structure and how it's, you know, one and done, and how there's back matter and there's no ads in it, but also describe it in terms of how we were trying to target retailers, and having that description on the back and having literally the, you know, the, what is that, an inch and a half little circle on the front that tells everyone that it is a contained story, so that there's no question about that. So yeah, we were very tactical in a lot of this.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think that's it.
A lot of thought went into it.
Yeah, a lot of thought. We're really excited. And we can't wait. When's the second issue come out?
May 15th. Same date as the second printing of the first issue.
Oh, sweet.
Awesome. Well, everybody make sure you pick up number one and then number two on May 15th.
Mm-hmm. We'll have signed copies here.
Yes, we'll have signed copies here.
Cover A, cover B.
Yep. Also, don't forget, Free Comic Book Day is on May 4th. That's next weekend. Yeah, you guys know what Free Comic Book Day is. We're going to have lots of writers, small press, and stormtroopers. Yes. The 501st is going to be here.
Come by, shoot them with a laser.
Don't shoot them with a laser.
They're disposable.
We're in Escape is Comics is not condoning shooting lasers at the 501st Legion.
Fine. They're nice ones.
Yeah, take pictures
with
them instead.
But you know that
instead.
If they shoot back, they'll miss.
So. Yeah,
it's
true.
That's true. I'm Jessica Balboni.
I'm Jesse Hitt.
And we'll talk to you guys later.
Yeah,
Bye.
If you enjoyed the show, tell a friend and rate and review on iTunes or Stitcher.
Or come visit us at the store at Escapist Comics. We're located at 3090 Claremont Ave in Berkeley, California.
Or you can find us online at escapistcomics.com or on Twitter at Escapist Comics, or send us an email at hello@escapistcomics.com. Put podcast in the subject line.
You can find Jesse on Twitter or Instagram at JesseTheHead.
And you can find Jessica on Twitter at Violet's Victory or on Instagram at Jessa Rossi.
Hello, and welcome back to the Escapist Comics podcast.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
We already did a intro.
We did. That's true. I didn't think about that part of it. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview.
Yeah, I guess we're going to go backwards.
Immediately before this.
Yeah.
She actually was chronologically.
It was, yeah. So we're actually going to do some reviews instead of news this week.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff coming out this week.
Yeah, we really wanted to talk about it, especially, let's just go into Naomi first.
Yeah, totally.
Because we finally got to read number 3.
Yeah, we got 3 in and 4 at the same time.
Yeah.
And what were they calling them? Like the final variants of 1 and 2?
They're the final printings.
There we go, final printings
of 1, 2, and maybe 3?
Yeah, because that's a new, right?
Yeah,
this is the second print.
It's the second print. I don't know if it was the final print. But flippers were going crazy for it too. But we had never even seen the first print.
Yeah, they did not give it to us.
No.
Thank you, DC,
Thank you for not
printing enough of the book that you relentlessly advertised for several months.
Yeah, and that we really, really wanted to just read. Like,
yeah.
We
We're not even flipping it.
Yeah, because like the first two issues were great, but it was like it was clear like Bendis was doing kind of a slow build to the reveal of this character's origin.
Yeah,
And it even says on the cover of number three, "Secrets Revealed." Right. So like for one and two, and like in the first issue, we met the character. In the second issue, we found out that she has a mysterious past and something that's being sort of actively hidden from her.
Mm-hmm.
And they're setting it up like, and then in the third issue, we'll find out. And then we just didn't get.
And
the
then
third
we didn't
issue.
Get it. So we're like, no, I want to know the mystery.
Is she an alien? Is she superpowered? What is it?
Yeah. And so in this issue, we finally get something right at the end.
Which, and we're not spoiling it because technically this came out last month.
Yes.
So we find out.
Yes, that her parents.
Yeah, that her parents, which we thought were her adoptive parents.
Yes.
But maybe her, well.
Yeah, they're definitely her adoptive parents.
Biological parents?
No, they're definitely
maybe
her adoptive parents.
Maybe they got different stuff going on racially in the alien world?
I think they're still her adoptive parents.
Okay.
just her dad is an alien.
Yeah.
Her mom is still from Earth.
Right. And the huge guy in town, the big mechanic guy that seems to know about her backstory, is also an alien.
Yes.
It's sort of, I mean, I guess they show it that the dad and the mechanic guy were in like an alien special forces group.
Yes. And they're both from the warring planets, too.
Yep.
They're in a war together. And her dad was sent to Earth to actually track the mechanic.
Yeah, who was escaped.
Yes.
With Naomi's mom and dad?
No. That was a trick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so they basically, the whole time we thought that was her mom, and it's just somebody who looked like her.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
It was definitely a little twist, a little misdirect, exactly. So that had nothing to do with her, I guess, at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they'll come back to it later. No.
Yeah, and they still don't, in number three, we don't know who or what Naomi is, really. We don't get her origin. We know that her adoptive dad is keeping an eye on her for some reason, and he's some kind of space big shot.
Yeah, and then it turns out they don't really know her origin either.
Yeah.
And number four came out this week, and they do actually tell you a bit more where she comes from. So it does turn out that she is from somewhere else. She's not from Earth.
Okay.
And I don't want to spoil it for everybody else, too. A lot of websites, you know, there was like, you know, like Flipper websites were like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, this doesn't really tell you anything. I don't know if they're just kind of throwing everybody off. But there is a big reveal in number four, too, about not necessarily where she's from, but definitely she's not from here.
Okay.
And I think that she's actually going to realize, like, what her origin is by, like, maybe a certain object that she finds or something that her parents have been hiding from her that they finally reveal from her. So I love this comic.
Me too.
I think it's great. I read 3 and 4 consecutively, and I just wanted to keep reading.
Yeah.
Which is a great, obviously, aspect of a comic that you just want to keep flipping those pages.
Yeah.
And definitely even sequentially, too, or just like reading a single issue, you want to read that next issue.
Yeah, it's compelling, even though like we don't know much and like objectively, like not a lot has happened. But it's like, it's kind of like a meta. It's a little bit like, it's not really like a superhero story yet. It's like we're getting an origin story told deliberately and like slowly by someone who really knows the superhero genre.
Yeah. And I don't know. So Bendis and David Walker are writing this together. I don't know how they're splitting it up, but you can definitely feel that Bendis is kind of like mold this superhero world, maybe.
Yeah.
And then Walker's writing the dialogue. I think that's how they're doing it. And then Campbell's just like hitting it out of the park with his art.
Yeah,
too.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
And hopefully, like, so we got 4 issues, and then by the end of the first, five or six issue arc.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 6.
We'll have a full picture of who this character is.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be ready for the second arc where probably a bunch of shit happens.
I'm going to guess,
integrate her into the DC universe proper, I think.
Yeah. We found out, too, that her dad has worked with Adam Strange and Green Lantern.
Yep.
They're definitely moving these characters into that DC universe a little bit more too, but very slowly, which is good, I think.
Yeah, you don't have to rush it.
No, not at all. And you definitely don't want to just throw them all in there at once too and kind of pollute the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or do the thing where it's like the first page is just her saying like, I'm Naomi, I'm from another planet, here's my powers.
Yeah.
Oh, gotta go fight somebody.
Yeah, exactly. Just be boring.
It's more fun to tell it this way.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, two thumbs up for Naomi.
Yeah.
Keep getting it. We're going to keep trying to get those issues back in. We already sold out number four.
If you can find it.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll get some more issues. We're going to keep upping our orders for it too. What else? Okay, so from that, I read something I really hated, which was Punk Mambo number one.
What's going on with punk stuff right now? Because I feel like there's been a weird resurgence in the last like year or two. Like,
well, I think it's just 90s stuff coming back. Definitely in the early 90s, punk was super popular. Yeah. And then, yeah, obviously all the way up into 2000, like punk was this uber popular.
Yeah.
So this is kind of like, I guess, Cullen Bunn's attempts.
Yeah, writing a thing for Valiant.
Yeah. And
I think it's cool that Valiant's like getting outside of the Valiant superhero universe and trying some new stuff with, you know, new characters and different worlds.
And that's what I was a little confused about. I'm like, is this inside the Valiant world?
Don't
know. And like, because I don't know much about the Valiant world, I have no idea. Or like, okay, so this is takes place on Grunch Road in Louisiana. And the main character, Punk Mambo, hate that name so much. I can't even tell you. She's narrating the story. And you can tell this by the pink word bubbles in the story because she's got bright pink mohawk.
Whoa, that's punk rock.
It's super punk rock. And a leather jacket. She kind of looks like Tank Girl, basically.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I don't fully hate, but it's just so regular. It's just like so obvious, you know?
Yeah.
The art's really good. I will give it that.
Mm-hmm.
I just wish she looked a little less, obvious.
Yeah.
That's what I can say. She's fighting these grunches. I think they're called Grunch Road.
Kind of like goblin guys.
Yeah, they're kind of like goblin orcs. They all know her name. They all know she's super badass. And she starts fighting them with like this green energy. And then she can also conjure up this spirit, which is called like the Mao or something like a cow. I don't know, something like that. So it kind of looks like Kool-Aid Man or I think he's not very cool looking either.
He kind of looks like a Titan also from Attack on Titan, like a giant baby a little bit.
I thought he kind of looks like Slimer.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Got a little bit of Slimer element.
Slimer and the Kool-Aid Man had a baby. Mm-hmm. This would be the spirit.
Bright pink.
Yeah. He's hot pink like her. So she beats all their asses, and then eventually the spirit that she's connected to gets broken away from her, like someone steals the spirit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's pretty much the main storyline. She's going to find who broke the spirit.
Okay, stole her thing.
Yeah, stole her spirit.
Okay.
But she could still kick people's ass even without the spirit.
Yeah, she's still pretty tough.
She's still pretty tough. She can conjure up other things like weapons and stuff like that. Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's all there is to the story. She goes back to the city. She goes back to New Orleans and visits with Marie Laveau, which I also thought was pretty obvious.
The voodoo lady, right?
Yeah, she's the voodoo lady. They couldn't think of another black character with
had
voodoo powers or create their own. And she tells her to go find these other people in this other town who are worshippers. They might have stolen her spirit.
Okay.
And that's the end of the first issue.
Yeah, so she's going to be doing supernatural stuff in New Orleans and being punk rock?
Yep.
All right.
That's it. I really can't tell you more. That's literally all that happens. I told you the whole story. I like the art, but I'm not going to continue reading it because there's nothing else going for it.
Yeah. Seems like they're maybe trying to do a Buffy meets Tank Girl set in New Orleans.
I think I think that's one of the pitches.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, just looking at the art and hearing you describe it, okay, sure.
I feel like maybe they should have got somebody else to write it. Like, I don't think Cullen Bunn cares about this project.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, he's written some good horror stuff.
Oh, yeah,
well,
Carroll County is fantastic.
Yeah,
and
it's
not like he doesn't know how to write a good story.
Yeah.
But does he care about this project? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. Maybe it'll get better. I don't think I'll be there for it, though. Maybe somebody has to convince me. Somebody convince me that this is a good comic.
Yeah, maybe by the time the trade comes out and we know what the full storyline is, it'll be cool.
Maybe if they didn't call it Punk Mambo.
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
It's like word salad. They just put two things together.
What's a mambo?
it's a different kind of music, like Lou Bega. Remember Mambo Number 5? It's that kind of music, as far as I know. Yeah. I don't know anything else about it. But also, I'm thinking of Mambas or the Snacks. The Starburst type of things.
Why don't they call it Punk Combo? I don't know. Not just rhyming things.
Just anything besides. Do they ever mention punk stuff at all, or is it just she looks like that?
So yeah, she just looks like that, so they call her that. Well, like, they don't call her name, like whatever her real name is. I can't imagine that's really her name. No. Hey, Punk Mambo.
I feel like you could have integrated some more punk-based stuff.
Could have just called her, like, whatever her name is, like, I don't know, Sheena. Queen of the Punks.
Sure. Maybe she has some punk rock friends and sidekicks.
Yeah. Well, she does go save some people that look kind of cool. They're gutter punks.
Yeah, yeah.
they're her kind.
Yeah. No, they don't have supernatural powers, though, do they?
No.
Okay.
They're just scummy.
Just regular. Yeah. All right. Cool.
Street people.
Hey, we had one of those guys in the store earlier today.
We did. He was wrapping himself with tape.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I thought it was just his shoe at first, and then he started to do other parts of his body.
No, he did take off his shoe, though. Damn.
Yeah.
You need to put that back on real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, yay.
Poor guy.
That was fun. He said he wrote for Dark Horse, though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
probably
so,
true.
Yeah, so don't become a comics writer,
definitely,
guys.
Not just something that he saw and then started talking about.
Definitely
to,
not
get us to try to let him be in the store longer. Sure wasn't that.
He also lives across the street right now.
Yeah.
So if you guys want to go meet a real comic writer, all comic writers, also this is your future.
Yeah.
Anyway,
not a stable industry.
What did you read this week?
There's one that I was looking forward to for a while that just came in this week called The Replacer. It's a 64-page graphic novella, so it's like just one giant single issue from Aftershock. It was only $8 for like a 64-page big old thing.
It's pretty good. It looks fancy.
And it's like a self-contained story written by this guy, Zach Thompson, who I wasn't really familiar with.
Oh, he read some stuff.
Yeah, he's done some other stuff for Aftershock, I think. Drawn by Arjuna Susini. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Italy. D. Cunniff doing the colors, who's like does a bunch of stuff for everybody and is awesome. And it's a cool story. So it's about this kid. It looks like it takes place in the early 90s because VHS tapes are still popular. Tell you the exact dates. It's 95 and 96.
Okay.
It's about a kid. So this family, mom, dad, two kids, older daughter, younger son. And one day, it's close to Christmas. Mom wants to go to midnight mass because she's very religious. The dad says he has to wait at home for an important phone call because the Sega Saturn is coming out.
And
he works at like an electronics store or something. So they got the shipment of Saturns coming in. So the dad stays home. The son fakes sick so that he can stay home. They stay up late watching horror movies together. Mid horror movie, the dad has a stroke.
Oh no!
And the kid calls 911. They save the dad, but when the dad comes back to the house, the kid senses something sinister is afoot. Gets the idea that his dad has been possessed by a demon, and he does all the research into what kind of demon it is and like how to defeat it and stuff. And it's like all the like cool, like classic kind of like late 80s, early 90s horror movie stuff where it's like, the kid's trying to figure it out, but the sister doesn't believe him, and she thinks her little brother's full of shit. And little brother's fully convinced, though. Mom is at her wit's end, and dad comes back. And then at a certain point, the dad starts improving faster than he's supposed to, or than the doctor said he would. And instead of being excited about it, the son's like, oh shit, that's
the demon.
Like taking him over more and more and making him stronger. And it's pretty good, man. So if you're fans of like Stranger Things and like, Monster Squad and all that, all those cool horror properties, this is definitely a good one. It's kind of hard to find right now. I think you might have to order it directly from Aftershock or find it on eBay or something.
Oh, they're out of it on Aftershock?
I don't know. I think we only ordered this one for me. But yeah, if you want one, you can either borrow it from
Jesse directly. We'll try ordering more since you are recommending it.
Yeah, totally.
It's usually Aftershock overprints.
Well, maybe it's still available.
We'll check it out.
And yeah, for $8, it's like a half graphic novel.
That's a full,
novel,
complete story. Right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
It's one standalone story.
That's cool that they did that and didn't like split it up into smaller issues. Awesome. So you fully recommend it?
Yeah, Replacer number one, 2 thumbs up.
How are the art? How's the art?
Good. It's not like mind-blowing or anything.
Yeah.
But it's like competent,
it tells
a story. And it's a story, and the demon does pretty scary and cool. So, and that's like, and other than that, it's just people and houses and stuff. But yeah, here, I'll show you real quick. Listeners can't see it, but look, it's a demon with a bunch of eyes and a bunch of limbs.
Ooh, he's kind of like a tree guy.
Yeah, very creepy looking. Very creepy. And he like comes out of people's bodies while still keeping part of his limbs in them to control them like a puppet. So,
but we don't know if he's real or not, right?
Right. That's the big question.
I like that, though. I like when they do that. We don't know if the kid is actually.
And that's the other one. The kid's the only one who can see him.
Right.
But then stuff will happen where it looks like maybe the demon is doing it. But also maybe somebody just knocked that glass off the table.
Right. That's cool. I like that.
Yeah. It's very much like told from the point of view of the son. Nice. And yeah, very good.
I also read Queen of Bad Dreams this week.
Ooh.
This is from Vault Comics.
Cool covers on that one.
It does have cool covers. Yeah. Vault is continuing their line of like vintage variants. I grabbed the vintage variant from Mike Kaluta. Well, this is the tribute to Mike Kaluta. This is actually, I think Nathaniel Gooden did this one. And it's a tribute for, Nathaniel Gooden with Tim Daniel, friend of the store.
Yep.
And this is the Madame Xanadu cover. So Queen of Bad Dreams, basically, okay, I am very flip-flopping on this cover, or on this comic. It was a little hard to get into this at first. I think it pays off, like, after a little while, but you really have to concentrate on what you're reading. And I was, like, fully invested in reading comics this week. I was, like, sitting in my backyard with a beer, just, like, chilling out. And I was like, I'm going to read comics. And then I got to this comic and I was like, what the fuck is going on in this comic? I had to read the first part of it like two or three times.
That's tough. And sometimes with like, we were talking about it earlier to say like with a longer story that you can sit down and read in one go, that's kind of nice when it's like, oh, the beginning is deliberately confusing. But then, you know, 20 pages in, you're like, oh, okay, now it's all becoming clear and I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. But it's kind of a gamble with like a thing that only comes out monthly.
Right.
If your first installment of a brand new story is deliberately confusing.
Yeah.
That's, man, I don't know.
Yeah. So they're called inspector judges.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what's an inspector judge?
Yeah. They're two different things.
Yeah. They don't tell you.
Okay.
First of all, what that is. And then, so it's this woman, she's battling like a really weird looking monster in the beginning. I'm like, well, it's cool art. She's an inspector judge. All right. She's got a glowing baseball bat.
Well, that's
like
cool.
A weapon. I'm like, all right. And she like beats the shit
smashes
out of it.
Smashes monster things.
Yeah. She that's smashes cool. monster things. And then she says she's like dealing with dreams and dealing with people. And I'm like, all right. She's smashing dream people. Sure. And then it gets like really fuzzy, and I guess so. Basically, she's a cop,
right.
like a dream headquarter place.
Okay,
but that takes a while to get there. I still don't know what an inspector judge is.
Yeah, that's like their version of it, like a dream cop.
I guess so.
Wasn't there already a book called Dream Police?
Yes, there
was. Okay,
yeah. They were much happier dreams.
At okay.
Time. but. Okay, so the weird part is there's this whole thing called like removal teams and reinsertion. So sometimes they reinsert the dreams into people.
Huh.
So dreams can escape people's brains in this world.
Yeah.
But they don't say why or how, which is fine. You don't have to overexplain everything.
Yeah.
But it, like I said, it's very foggy like to get there. So the basic gist of it is there's like a big political person. Their son goes there. He has a dream that escapes him. She's become dangerous, supposedly, to him. So this main cop of the story, the Queen of Bad Dreams, has to go out and find her.
Okay.
For them. That's how you get there eventually.
Yeah.
There's still very unclear, like, there's all these other dreams running around. You can't tell which are which, if they're people or if they're dreams. So that's something they're going to have to clear up, I think, later on. I still found it very interesting, like, so once I got through it.
Still check out number two.
Yeah,
I'll
check out number two and then hope maybe, like, the editing, you know, they'll, like, maybe clean that up a little bit.
Clarify some stuff
for me. I like the art. I thought it was really cool. It looks really different. I like the coloring a lot. It's very, like, bright, like, different-looking world.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of comics, which I like that, like, cool tone, kind of like the comic you were just reading has.
Yeah, very, like, sort of autumn-y. colors. Yeah.
But in this, it has very different, like really bright, cool colors.
Yeah.
And I like that for this type of book.
Yeah, totally.
It's kind of like Blade Runner-y, too.
Yeah, a little bit like Motor Crush, too.
Yeah, Motor Crush,
too. A lot of, like,
too.
Fluorescence and pastels
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I like that. In the second half of the comic, she's just chasing this dream around. Okay. And at the end, basically, it seems like she's not bad. So there's something else going on.
Right. Oh, okay. So there's, like, a conspiracy.
Yeah.
And maybe the politicians are...
Yeah.
Good. I'm glad the politician's son is a bad guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a douchebag. You can tell, like, right away.
Okay, good.
So, yeah, I have one thumb up on it right now. I'll check it back out later. Also, this week, Archie, you always have to check out the weird Archie horror books. Mm-hmm. It also had a great cover from Hack. This is Jughead, The Hunger versus Vampironica.
Ooh. And Hack's been doing a lot of covers for the Archie spinoffs lately.
I think he can't help himself.
Yeah. Oh, and that one looks like the cover of a VHS movie. And so does the cover of Replacer.
Oh, my God. It's almost exactly the same.
Yeah. So I think the sticker placement is like standard.
It really
they
is.
They do that on purpose. Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
They both say horror on it.
Big trend in comics, the VHS cover. The Stranger Things hardcover had that?
Oh, yeah, it did. Are they all going to come? VHS is going to make a comeback? Yeah. Please, God, no.
Cassettes are kind of making a comeback.
Cassette tapes?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that should never happen either.
I know. The sound's bad.
The
they
sound's
get all messed
bad.
Up.
Yeah, they like after you play them enough, they fucking warp.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. So, Vampironica, story by Frank Thierry, also friend of the store.
Yep.
Art by Pat and Tim Kennedy. Oh, I guess they're related.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah. And then Joe Eisma.
What if they're siblings?
Well. Maybe.
Probably.
Yeah. Working together.
I guess. Maybe cousins. That'd be cool. Like the Duke boys, Bo and Luke. Could be. I hope they're cousins. I want them to be cousins.
You want them to be cousins? I don't know. There's a lot of weird cousin stuff going on in Game of Thrones.
That's true.
Not good to be cousins right now. This had really good art. It has that cool coloring palette we were just talking about.
Yeah, that's sort of become like the house style for like the Archie like horror books.
Yeah, that like pastel, cool color palette. Yeah. What am I going to say about this book? It was fun. It was.
Are they actually fighting each other, Jughead and Vampire Veronica?
Not yet. Okay. I think they're going to actually join forces.
Werewolf Jughead, Vampire Veronica. Werewolves and vampires, age old enemies.
Yes, they are. I think they're actually going to join forces in this comic
interesting.
And fight
okay.
together.
Ah.
So in the last Vampironica art, she fought Dracula.
Sweet.
Killed him and thought that she was going to become a normal human again.
Right, because that's what
people
happens.
Do. Yeah, king of vampires. Yeah, they think that it's over. However, there's a very interesting twist in this. Turns out Dracula was not the king of vampires.
Oh.
Her parents are actually vampires.
Oh, shit.
So she was a vampire before she was even bit and didn't know. She's been a vampire the whole time.
Well, can you get unvampired if you were born a vampire?
I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah. Or did they bite her? I have no idea. They're just twisting it all apart in here.
Well, I didn't know vampires could reproduce. Well, I guess there's all different kind of vampires.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's what they're doing in this.
like the Anne Rice vampire, you stay whatever age you were turned, so she would just she'd be a fetus.
She'd be a baby.
She'd be a fertilized
egg.
Maybe they
were vampires and then turned her into a vampire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe they've just been a vampire a really long time. Mm-hmm. Maybe they adopted her. Maybe she was never even born from them.
Yeah. Or I guess Blade was born half vampire, half person and grew up into, ages at somewhat normal rate.
Right.
Maybe Morbius is a living
vampire. Oh, that's why she can go outside. Maybe she's a halfling.
Yeah, totally.
Just like Blade.
That makes sense.
Yeah. They should explain that better.
I bet they will.
Maybe not.
Is this going to be an ongoing
It is going to be. I didn't know it was, and it totally is. We actually haven't even seen Jughead become a werewolf yet. And also, I don't really understand how they're all joining, because I thought Jughead like killed a bunch of people in his comic.
Right, he was on the run, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was on the run, and now he's back like hanging out with him again.
Hmm.
So maybe they're going to... Yeah, I thought those were two like completely separate entities, but I guess not. I guess he's going to... I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah. There's a lot of spooky stuff going on in Riverdale.
There really is.
There's a zombie outbreak. There's a vampire. There's a werewolf. There's a witch.
Yeah, I don't know if Sabrina's in this one, but damn. That would be cool if she came and just was like, just fucked up everyone's shit. Anyways, it was fun. You know, it's just the vampire or the horror series that are, but nothing can match Sabrina. I just wish they'd bring that comic
back. Was that
the
original one, or did Afterlife with Archie come
Afterlife
first?
With Archie was first, okay. And then Sabrina spun out of Afterlife with Archie.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Which they should also bring back, but I guess, Roberto Sacasa is too busy with all of his television writing.
Yeah, all right. We'll give the property to someone else then. There's so
that's
many good writers out there and so many good artists that, like, you know, you could take over. And that's what Archie has always done. You know?
And they said, it's too good and they can't. You can't let it go.
Okay.
He's never going to come back.
Yeah. It's very busy. Get that money. All right.
Too busy. That's what I read this week.
What else? I also did East of West 42.
Oh, cool.
Which we've been waiting for.
Oh, my God. That cover's so awesome.
And this is maybe it's one of my favorite issues of East of West. It's a flashback issue. We get to see the events that originally led to the Four Horsemen breaking up in the first place. Ooh. We get to see Death turn on. We get to learn a little backstory about the relationships of the characters. And I don't want to say too much or give too much away, but it's cool to see younger versions of all the main players and sort of get to see how this all went down in the first place. And the entire issue is basically just one big sort of dramatic action sequence with little bits of very meaningful dialogue thrown in. So
wasn't the art amazing though?
Nick really outdid himself.
Yeah,
the way he draws action specifically, especially in this issue, is like maybe the best I've ever seen. Like it's so good. And like, even if you never read an issue of East of West and you had no idea about the story, you could pick this up and still be completely like sucked in.
Oh yeah.
Be like, oh my God.
Definitely.
It's so good.
It's like everything, he just like smoothed everything out like a little bit more.
Yeah.
And even the coloring too is just, it's a little bit different because it's in the past too.
Yeah.
It's like
right.
brightened up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. The world hadn't quite gone downhill.
Yeah.
And also like I noticed, and I kind of noticed it for the first time with this issue of East of West is like, the size of all the panels was perfect. Like I was never like straining my eye. Cause I'll do the thing where I like put the comic closer to my face to like see stuff. And I never had to do that once, even though there were some very like intricate and detailed panels going on with this. Everything was a perfect size.
Yep.
And there was no like wasted space. It didn't feel it was perfect.
Yeah. I think we have 8 more issues.
Yeah.
Or they're going to 60.
Oh, are they? 60 would make sense.
I think it's 60.
8 feels like it might be too short, especially given that we're doing a flashback now, because that means 43, 44, 45 to 50. We have to resolve absolutely everything.
I'll have to, have to check. Maybe it's 50. We'll have to double check.
Yeah, hopefully
it can stay on
schedule.
We've got to do a party when it ends.
Yeah.
East of West party. All right.
Nope.
We'll tech with Nick about that, East of West party.
We'll keep you guys updated.
And make sure we'll see Avengers soon.
Mm-hmm.
Next week is Free Comic Book Day. We talked about that. May the Force be with everyone.
Yep.
Please come hang out with Stormtroopers and hang out with us. We want to see you. Please come.
Yeah.
I'm Jessica Balboni.
I'm Jesse Hitt.
We'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.